Well, today we want to talk about fathers. I hope the ladies won't check out on this. Really, everything I say is going to be applicable to you too. We are, after all human beings, and so we have mostly things in common. There are just, you know, more subtle nuances between maleness and femaleness, and I'm going to talk about those nuances. But, you know, we're comparing apples to apples here, you know, males and females, we are all apples, you know, it's not apples to oranges. And so I hope the ladies won't check out on us. But there's definitely a need right now for understanding biblical maleness. And so I want to address that. The danger is that if we don't talk about it here, it just isn't going to be talked about. So here we are on Father's Day talking about biblical maleness. And what ends up happening is there's this cartoonish, superficial caricature of what maleness is. And somebody says, you know, well, what is male? And then you get this idea, you know, the sneering guy, the guy who's robotic, emotionless, he's very hostile, he has all this pent-up anger and that kind of thing going on. And, you know, boastfulness, profanity, you know, I can cuss like a sailor. Inebriation, recklessness with substances, you know, I can outdrink you and all of that nonsense. And that becomes what a young boy thinks of as maleness. If we're not careful, we grow up thinking that, and that is not satisfactory. Teresa and I have been watching this show. I'm not going to tell you the name of it. I think it's a nice show, by and large. And the hero is sort of a Jason Bourne-like guy, you know, in close quarters combat. He easily beats all of his opponents. He's a marksman. You know, he can do it all. He's just this great, tough guy. And then on season 3 of this show, they introduce this female character. And the female character is only in real life 5'3", and she can do anything that the male character can do. I mean, he's a total hero. He's 6'2". She's 5'3", but she can do anything. She is, you know, the little warrior ninja, and she's got a bad attitude, and you know, like toxic masculinity, people say it's because it seems like the only emotion you guys can feel or that you allow yourselves to feel is anger. So that's what she says. This little actress, she says, what I do feel is anger. And everybody says she has no emotions. I just feel anger. That's the only emotion she allows herself to feel. So it's like toxic masculinity because it's a female. You know, it's just so weird. Oh, and then the male hero isn't exactly like that. And then, of course, she can outdrink all the boys, right? So she's with some fellow females, at a club, and they're going to drink champagne. And she sets that aside, says, sorry, girls, my system only runs on diesel. And she cranks back a vodka. And so, you know, she can outdrink everybody. She's tough. She gets inebriated. She doesn't care. She's reckless. When it comes to relationships, they have her emulated. You know, this is like the perfect political correctness, right? Having her emulate the men. So the man, hero, asks her, you know, are there any men in your life? And she says, relationships are for amateurs. Guys these days, they have so many emotions. They cry. They want to be held. I just don't know what to do with them. I'm a pragmatist. I go out, have a fun night or three, and then I move on. You know, no muss, no fuss. And so we have this woman character who's more macho than the machoist character in the whole world. And of course, none of that is true maleness. It's a caricature. And every bad thing that males do, they've installed onto her character. And then to round out the perfect political correctness, they make her bisexual. So she's neither quite male nor female. But everything that we call toxic masculinity has been now imitated by this character. And this is a thing, you know. If you watched Hunger Games, that female character, she beat up on everybody. So what we're doing is we're taking the worst things about maleness, and we're asking now not only our boys to be that, we're asking our girls to be that. That's a really big problem. So what are we really trying to accomplish here? Seems like you're going to have two competing views of maleness. One view, the world view, and by the way, there are two iterations of this. You can even have the lazy male who sits in his mother's basement and plays video games all of his life. Or you can go the other direction and have the career male who is bowling over everything in the corporate world or whatever his career is. And either one then can be translated with the rest of the statement. It's a pretty selfish smart aleck with a whatever attitude who thrashes through life with frequent hookups and inebriation. So that is like the ultimate male in the world. And if you listen much in the high school locker rooms, you can see that's pretty much what the males have decided is maleness. It's almost a mirror image of what you would see in a prison system if you were to visit the prisoners. That's called toxic masculinity. There's another possibility, though, and obviously I like this one much better. This is the New Testament option. And a real male, a God-designed male, is going to be a high producer with foresight, strong instincts to protect the weak, and a willingness to risk personal pain in pursuit of a worthy goal. I want to unpack this a little bit and show you why this is the New Testament ideal for maleness. And these two people are very, very different. Their approaches to life are extraordinarily different. And I hope very much that I can persuade every male in this room to be in that second category, not the first. So here's where we're going to go. Real maleness, that is real in a sense, the way God designed us to be. Real maleness, maleness is going to be protective. It's going to be adventurous. It's going to be alert. It's going to be determined and persistent. And when you look at that list, protective, you can see that's exactly opposite of hostile. We're not trying to hurt people, we're trying to help people. When we talk about adventurous, that is going to be the opposite of cowardice and the opposite in a Christian application of faithlessness. We're going to be brave in what we do for God. Alertness, that's the opposite of being impaired chemically, or there are other ways to be impaired. You can be impaired by the people you run around with, so you don't think clearly. You're not smart. You're not alert. If you run with wolves, you'll surely start to howl. You'll be impaired. And so we don't want to be that. We want to be alert, and we want to be determined and persistent, and that's really important. By the way, all the women are supposed to be this too as Christian women, but we're going to see that there is a little special edge to all of this for maleness. Maleness is protective. In Romans 15:1, again, this is for the girls too, but you can see in a minute at least as we unpack this, some of the implications for maleness. Romans 15:1, one of the most basic principles in the New Testament. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities, the weaknesses of the weak, and not please ourselves. The strong always take care of the weak. That's the way God wants his kingdom to be. That's the way God's administration works. If I'm weak, then I don't expect you, strong, to bully me, to exploit me. I expect you, as a strong Christian, you're going to watch out for me. That's protection. And as, I hope, a healthy, emotionally well male, I'm always going to take care of you. I protect everybody I know as far as I know. Sometimes when I see people at odds with one another, the thought that comes in my mind is, who are you protecting? Because I want to protect both of these parties. Who are you protecting? I get the idea that you're only protecting one of the parties. And so we that are strong, and I hope you'll walk with the Lord and be strong, emotionally well and even physically strong. We that are strong, we're going to take care of the weak. It's just what we do. Women and children first. We're going to take care of them. 1 Peter 3:7. You can just see the Lord is going to put a little extra pressure on the males. This is maleness. Husbands, live with your wives according to knowledge. That's be smart about it. Giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel. Just across the board, there is something about maleness that is a little stronger than femaleness. And so you see in the Romans 15 text, once you realize that, we who are strong, we're going to take care of those girls who live with us. I mean, we'll take care of everybody. But especially, Peter says, you know you have to take care of your wife because there's something about maleness that's a little stronger than femaleness, and that means you have a responsibility. And that's You know, we want the women to take care of the weak too, and they do. But you can see here in the home, there's a little special nuance for the males. And then you just see this in general. It's just the way Scripture breathes. When Jesus was talking, and of course Jesus was the ultimate male, he certainly wasn't cowardly. And here's how he just talked in his everyday preaching. He said, know this, that if the master of the house had known at what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have allowed his house to be broken up. That's self-defense. Not only self-defense for, you know, your personal safety, but even for your stuff. And Jesus said, of course you know that if a guy who owns a house knew that a bad guy was coming, he'd pay attention. He's not going to let this happen. Is that interesting? He would protect his stuff. And notice once again, it's the maleness that Jesus has the emphasis on here. Obviously, no emotionally well, physically strong male is going to let somebody waltz into his house and bust up his stuff. And Jesus just took that for granted. See, that's self-defense. The same thing in Matthew 12. Jesus said, well, how could one enter a strong man's house and steal his stuff, spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man? So there's no way you're going to walk into a strong man's house and victimize him unless you have the ability to overcome him. And if you overcome him, then you can take his stuff. But you see, Jesus just assumes you're not going to waltz in there and take his stuff. If he's a strong man, you're not going to do that. Now, if you're stronger than he is and you can overcome him, then, you know, then you can. But Jesus just expected us to protect our stuff. In Luke 22, this is very close to the end of Jesus' life. He'll be arrested this very night. And he's telling his disciples, he that does not have a sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. And they said, well, Lord, between us all, here are two swords. And he says, that's enough. So here is Jesus telling his followers that they might want to get a sword. That's self-defense. You know, it's a sword. That's all it's good for. It's not for cutting down the tree. It's not for buttering your bread. It's a weapon. And so Jesus said you might need a weapon. And real maleness has to do with protection. Now, of course, where we live today, protection primarily comes in forms like taking care of people financially. So for your situation, protection means you're going to have a STEM skill. You know, we hear about that now, STEM. Science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So if you're a young guy and you want to take care of people, one of the best things you can do is be smart in school and not just smart with social studies. Get this STEM stuff down, because that's how you provide for people. That's how you take care of people. Or if that's not you, good, fine, then you have to have a skilled trade. You know that a plumber makes more money than a medical intern, a man who is a doctor, but he's in still, you know, his early stages. Plumbers commonly make $70, $80, $100 an hour. And that's what it means to take care of people. It does not mean you can go in the basement and play video games all day. That's not going to cut it. So if you're going to protect people in our world, that's what it means. You add to that personal skills, because if you're hard to get along with, nobody's going to want to be around you. That's whether you are starting your own plumbing business or whether you're an engineer. You need personal skills. You need to take care of people at work, or nobody can stand to be around you. That's personal skills. And you add to that formidable physical presence. And it's in this order. You don't want to say, well, you know, I'm a tremendous weightlifter. I can bench press 500 pounds, but I still live in the basement and play video games all the time. You know, I think you have that kind of backwards. But still, a formidable physical presence counts for something. You do that, and that's protection. Now, of course, Christian women are protectors too. We're not comparing apples to oranges here with men and women. We're comparing apples to apples. The women are protectors too. They sure are, but they're not as capable. Oh, don't get mad at me. They're not as capable. There is a danger. We are always in danger in our current societal milieu. We're always in danger of defying a natural biological division of labor. When I say natural biological, I'm also referring to the Creator who makes biology, who makes nature. There is a created division of labor that you don't want to defy. If you do defy it, there will be some trouble. So, this relates to protection. In 2018, you know that every female in the nation of Israel has to serve time in the military. Well, that gives us a laboratory for testing the female recruits and the male recruits. 46% of the female officer in the Israeli Defense Force failed their annual physical test, but only 10% of the male officers failed. There's some kind of a difference happening there. In an Israeli Journal article from 2014, not so long ago, they found that the female recruits were 5 inches shorter and 20 pounds lighter than male recruits. They had 30% less lower body strength and 30 to 50% less upper body strength and lower oxygen exchange rates. Furthermore, 21% of the females in light infantry training, this is not as heavy as regular infantry training. 21% of the females experienced stress fractures, but only 2.3% of the males did. And 41% of the females had knee pain, but only 24% of the males did. What we're learning from this is that there is a physicality, there's a physical difference here that should be respected. And we're not saying that anybody is bad or anybody is good. We're saying that there's a difference. And women, particularly Christian women, are very protective too. But you're going to see they are less capable physically. Colonel Sagi of the IDF reported that when the recruits were being trained, they put benches next to the walls that had to be scaled, and only the women could step on the bench to get over the wall. But the men couldn't do that, only for the women. And then they realized that the ladies were lagging behind in all of the running, so they ran them in circles. That way you couldn't tell that the ladies were lagging behind so much because they'd be lapped and all spread out. And he's offended at that. He says, so the propaganda is everything's the same and everything's not the same. So there is a difference physically. And there is a natural, biological, created division in labor that comes from all of this. The historical norm, we're not saying the way things are today because we have technology to affect this. But the historical norm for women over the centuries, for centuries now, not just a brief period of time, for centuries, has been that women bear between 5 and 8 children in their lifetimes. Besides bearing 5 to 8 children, they also have miscarriages, so they're pregnant more than that would just indicate in and of itself. Furthermore, the historical norm has been that they're breastfeeding their babies once they're born for between 13 and 18 months. Depending on where you are, the culture and the situation, sometimes closer to 2 years and sometimes longer than that. It's not unheard of to be longer than that. It's kind of common to be right up there near 2 years. So you realize that in this typical scenario, we would be talking about women throughout history giving more than a decade, maybe substantially more than a decade, to the disadvantage, if you will, of being pregnant and then having to stay close by the baby to breastfeed. That is a period of time when you're at your peak physical strength. And it would clearly impact everything you did. And so we find that there is a natural division of labor. The baby is crying in the middle of the night. Which one of you should get up and breastfeed him? A natural division of labor. Poor girl has her belly sticking out here, and you have to go clear the acreage so you can plant a crop. Now, which of you should probably be doing that, male or female? There is a natural division of labor. And if you say, no, I don't want it to be so, I just don't want it to be so, then you run into other problems. A few days ago, a full-page ad was taken out in the New York Times. It was signed by almost 200 CEOs who were talking about their desire for abortion laws to be protected at all costs. I have slightly changed the verbiage here, but I put the new verbiage in brackets so that you could see what they were saying. You see, it's all about the money to the CEOs. He said, the headline, as you can see, is Don't Ban Equality. in smaller print. Don't ban equality in the workplace. When females are empowered to succeed, our economy is better. They mean you have to give them the right for abortions because it's good for our economy. When females are empowered to succeed, our economy is better. Restricting access to abortion threatens the independence and economic stability of our female employees. It impairs our ability to recruit top female talent and protect the well-being of all the females who keep our business thriving. We stand against policies that hinder females' independence and ability to fully succeed in the workplace. So you see what's happening there. That we don't want to observe the natural, biological, created division of labor. We don't want it and we don't like it. So what will we do then? How about if we just kill the babies? Isn't that a good idea? So you see, if you won't observe the biological division of labor, then there's going to be a price to pay for that. Well, so there we are. Unfortunately, the twisted idea for maleness is not protection, but hostility. And that's so ugly, so awful. And as Christians, we cannot tolerate that. So Steven Pinker, an agnostic, he says, the one great universal in the study of violence is that most of it is committed by 15 to 30-year-old men. So maleness is twisted to become violence, hostility. One reviewer of Pinker says, ironically, we're currently trying to masculinize women, both in business and entertainment, where the ideal woman is now presented as a slim, beautiful, brilliant, athletic ninja warrior. Even though no one can achieve this outside of the movies, this ideal may not be a good thing. It may not be the right idea to make all the rest of the world hostile. Maybe we should make the entire world protective. Ravi Zacharias was debating an atheist, and he said this during the debate, which I love. If you, Professor Glover, were stranded at the midnight hour on a desolate Los Angeles street, and if, as you stepped out of your car with fear and trembling, you were suddenly to hear the weight of pounding footsteps behind you, and you saw 10 burly young men who had just stepped out of a dwelling coming toward you, would it or would it not make a difference to you to know that they were coming from a Bible study? Everybody in the audience laughed, as you did, and the professor conceded that would indeed make a difference. We Christian men are not violent, we're not hostile, we're not upset at anybody. We're protectors, though, and we always want to be protectors. That's the right thing. God-designed maleness is protection, and it's also adventurous. And this, again, pops up in Scripture in various ways. One of the most interesting verses along these lines comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 16, the last chapter in that epistle, and Paul is just buttoning things up. You know, he's signing off, and as he's getting ready to say goodbye, he tells the people, he says, watch, stand firm in the faith, behave like men, be strong. When he says behave like men, you know, he just means male men, not just, you know, humankind. He says, I want you all to behave like men. That includes being strong. And real maleness is adventurous. You have to behave courageously. You have to be strong. I love this in Hebrews chapter 11, one of my favorite chapters of the Bible. And notice what these males in biblical history have done. What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets who through faith subdued kingdoms. You know, people were against them. You know, bad guys, foreigners. And they put them down. They subdued kingdoms. And they worked righteousness. See, they weren't just hostile. They were accomplishing some really great stuff, but it was righteous. They wanted to make the world a safer, happier place. They subdued kingdoms. They worked righteousness. They obtained promises. They stopped the mouths of lions. Daniel quenched the violence of fire. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Escaped the edge of the sword. All of the fights. Out of weakness, they were made strong. They grew valiant in fight, and they turned to flight the armies of the foreigners. See, they accomplished some great stuff. They did all this by faith. And faith is going to be essential to all of this discussion we're having right now about adventure. So there's a danger in defying the natural biological division of labor in the matter of adventure. We always hear safety first. You know, all of the factories, safety first, safety first, safety first. If you're a male, don't listen to that. Now, there are places where that's true. Well, let me ask you. Were the Wright brothers putting safety first when they flew that airplane? When we went to the moon, was that safety first? When those kooks crossed the Atlantic from Europe to start a new country, were they putting safety first? Most of the great stuff we do in life, we do because we did not put safety first. Now, you know where there's an exception to that? When you're a mom. When you're a mom and you're trying to raise those little children, safety first. It's a wonder that any of them ever survived childhood. I am just flabbergasted to see the horrific things kids do. And fortunately, there are moms around with a safety first mentality, and they're keeping those little ones from destroying themselves. I always talk about the times when we lived here on the church property, and I went over to get something out of the parsonage garage, and our trampoline had been scooted over next to the roof, and the parsonage roof, and Josh, Jed, and Luke. Luke was probably 9 years old, maybe 8 years old, and so, you know, he's the youngest, and they had been jumping off the peak of the roof onto the trampoline, which is all good, you know, I get that. But naturally, that's not enough. So now they're jumping off the peak of the roof. They're flinging their legs up and landing on, you know, to do a back drop. You land on your shoulders and the upper back and then do a kip and land on your feet. So Josh and Jed have done that. And now my 9-year-old son is at the peak of the roof. And you know how a person becomes a quadriplegic? You bend your head forward until your chin touches your chest. And then you bend it more. And I look, and Josh and Jed are telling Luke, "Come on, Luke, don't be a chicken. You can do it." And I said, "Boys, if he falls wrong and he digs his chin into his chest and stretches his neck, he'll be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. This cannot be worth it." How do they survive? But at a certain age, I mean, there's always safety first in some ways, but not mostly, not all the time. And that means there's going to be some adventure. You got to learn how to fly. I mean, you don't have to, but the Wright brothers did. And you got to say, you know what, there's a forest there, and I'm going to knock it all down and make a farm. Say, well, that's a lot of work. Well, I don't care. We'll make it work. You're going to build skyscrapers. You might fall. Well, so what? We might fall. Bandits might come. Well, if they come, we'll shoot them. You know, we got to do this. It's not always safety first. It's like, what do you got to do in life? You know, goals besides just safety. And so that's maleness. And that's okay in Scripture. And we're going to relate that to faith in a minute. Women are adventurous too, you know. We're comparing apples to apples here, you know. We're all humans. But once again, that biological division of labor. You know, the woman has to think, if I'm crippled, who's going to take care of the little guy? And if Dad gets crippled, he said, I'm going to go there, I'm going to knock all those trees down, I'm going to make a farm, and a tree falls on Dad and kills him, the fallback plan is the mom. But you can't have mom dying, because if you kill the mom, you kill the baby. You could kill the dad, but don't kill the mom. So mom, safety first. Dad, And you can see this. I mean, it's hardwired into your heart. It's like you can't even avoid it. It just happens. So, for example, John Lott, who's a conservative commentator from the University of Maryland, he said, since the 1960s, women have always cast more votes than men. So 53% of all the people who go to the voting booth are women. And without the women's votes, without naming any party, there's one party that's kind of famous for small government and small handouts. And then there's another political party in our country that's kind of famous for big government and big welfare handouts. Well, the women always vote for the party that has a big government and lots of handouts, always meaning in general. So he says, without the women's votes, the party of small government and less welfare would win every single time. Women are afraid, and they want the government to take care of them. That's the implication. And interestingly, single women and women in insecure marriages, they vote for entitlements. Like, if the old man flakes out on me, or if I don't ever get an old man, I want daddy government to take care of me. Interestingly, again, though, women who are secure in their marriages oppose entitlements. Like, hey, we're trying to bring up a little family here, and the last thing we want is somebody on our check named FICA taking one-third of our income. They don't like that. And then, what's really interesting is if these same people get divorced, then they flip over to vote for the big government with lots of handouts. As divorce rates increase, voters have become more liberal. Maybe it's possible that women are more vulnerable to these kinds of things, maybe again partly because they're trying to bring up little ones and they don't know how they can do it without help. All of this relates to Christian sacrifice. I guess I should have shown you this other part too. Safety first isn't really going to work for the Christian life. I'll tell you what's safe. If it's really safety first, here's what's safe. Don't ever give another dollar to the offering plate. That's crazy. I mean, what good is going to come out of that? You need that dollar. That's your security. So if safety is really first, you never give another dime to God, His work, His kingdom. That's safety first. And I'll tell you what else. Safety first. You should be making sure that you invest all of your time in creature comforts. Because, you know, you might find out that you're going to die in 6 months and you've been wanting to take a trip to Europe. So you better just do that. You better spend your time on yourself because you don't know if you're going to have any more time. So safety first. Let's do all the stuff we want to do right now because we don't even know if we're going to have tomorrow. So safety first, right? And you know what's really crazy? You know what's really radical? If you say, I'm going to bring my finances to God in a really sacrificial way. That's madness. And you can imagine somebody saying, you know, you're giving far too much money to charity. Yes, you are. Well, so what? That's what it means. That's what I'm into. Say, well, you're risking a lot. I know. Real maleness is being alert. This is a big thing. You are not living on a playground. You're living on a battleground. Now, if you're living on a playground, you can kick back and just think everything's fine, and you can imagine that you're safe and somebody's going to take care of you. But if you're living on a battleground, then that means you're going to have to pay attention. In some ways, you can never let your guard down. And you know what the scripture says about your spiritual warfare? You are not, at this moment, warring against flesh and blood. And I always like to point out to you that that's in the present tense. We are not battling against flesh and blood right now, but against evil spirits that are rocking our world at this very moment. So you are always on a battlefield. In some sense, you can never let your guard down. Now, that doesn't mean you have to make yourself sick with anxiety, but it does mean you're going to pay attention. You know, you have to pay attention. Real maleness is being alert. And notice how this comes up. And again, the ladies are alert too. We're not just saying it's, you know, all male, but you're going to see there's a special nuance of this for males. 1 Corinthians 16:13, watch. This is be awake, be alert, vigilance. Watch, stand firm in the faith, behave like men, be strong. It's the same thing we saw a bit ago, but with the emphasis on watch. In Matthew 24:43, same thing we saw before. But he said, if the master of the house had known that this was going to happen, then he would have watched. He would have paid attention. Revelation 3:2, Jesus tells the churches, be watchful, pay attention, strengthen the things that remain. It's so easy to be foolish. Foolish is easy. Wise is hard. And you have all this talk in Scripture about being sober. And when the Scripture says that, it's not just about, you know, alcohol or substance abuse. But of course, it's related. Life is hard enough. I have financial decisions to make. I have decisions to make in my marriage. I have decisions to make that affect all of you. The last thing, the very last thing I need in my life is to be impaired. I do not want to cause self-imposed hardship because I was impaired. As it is, in my best state of mind, I'm none too bright. And the last thing I need is a chemical to impair me. So I do something dumb when I'm with somebody, when I'm by myself, whatever. I do not want to be impaired. But it's not just that. It's like, are you impaired, once again, by your peer group? Are you associating with people who are making you dumb? Because it's so easy to be dumb. Are you associating with people who make you smart? You can be impaired not because of chemicals, but because of the situation you keep putting yourself in. Don't mess your own wisdom up. Don't run with the wolves and you won't howl. And you see it over and over again. Be sober. Be sober. The older men must be sober. Young men, tell them to be sober. And teach the young women to be sober. Denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly. Gird up the loins of your mind. You know, that's like the days when they all wore skirts. You grab them up and times you can run and jump. Gird up the loins of your mind and be smart. Be sober. Be sober. Be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walks around and he'd like to take you down. So you let your guard down, you get impaired, or you run with the wrong group, or you just read the wrong stuff and visit the wrong websites, and the next thing you know, you're impaired, you're not smart. And isn't it interesting that the Bible actually commands us to be smart? Like, well, how can you command somebody to be smart? But notice how it happens. Matthew 10:16, Jesus says, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. You're on a battleground, not a playground. So because of that, be wise. You have to be smart. That's a command. Be wise. Ephesians 5:15. See then that you walk circumspectly. That means carefully, exactly. See that you walk exactly. Not as fools, but as wise. That's a command. See that you act wisely. Walk wisely. Ephesians 5:17. It's a command. Do not be unwise. Like, how can you command somebody to be smart? And yet it is. Do not be unwise, but understanding. 1 Corinthians 14:20. Brothers, do not be children in understanding. That's a command. Don't be a child. Do not be children in understanding. Nevertheless, in malice and meanness, you know, be like children. They're great. They don't hardly ever hurt anybody, seriously. In malice, be children, but in understanding, be adults. You know, be smart. And so alertness is what we do. And of course, the women are alert too. But probably some of this biological stuff happening affects them. You know, for example, if you are going to spend the prime of your life raising children, then that means you're going to be a great one for compassion, for nesting, trying to make everything nice. And that's great. That's the way it should be. But maybe that makes a person vulnerable. So, for example, the FBI says that women, especially widowed or divorced women, make up 63% of all the victims of romance frauds. And they lose twice as much money as males who are victims of romance frauds. It's like, hey, you know, the women are overrepresented there. Maybe it's because there's a little vulnerability of some kind that's being exploited. Four times as many women as men give money to panhandlers. You can say, well, maybe that's good. You know, that's compassion. But in America, most panhandlers have had options. And they've burned a lot of bridges. So maybe it's not a feather in your cap to give a lot of money to panhandlers. Women carry 2/3 of all the student loan debt in America. That's heavy. More women carry credit card debt than men. And women also tend to carry more debt on medical bills and automobile loans. You can just imagine, you know, I'm a little insecure here. I want to make the nest a little better, a little upgrade on my car. And that's what happens. Northwestern University says women tend to pay higher prices for their auto repairs, you know, kind of being taken in there. Women fueled the real estate crash in 2007. I mean, there were lots of factors. But, you know, the truth is, most men don't dream about having closets the size of a studio apartment. And most men don't dream about having bathrooms that are suitable gathering spaces for your friends and family. They don't have to be that big. The women kind of wanted that, and they drove that. And so the women are alert. You know, we're not trying to say they're not alert. It's just maybe something is happening there biologically to make the nest, to get a little security. And then real God-designed maleness is determined and persistent. This is a really important point. People don't understand boys, and boys themselves don't understand what in the world is going on in our society. So we go back to 1 Corinthians 16 again, and watch what's happening here. Watch, stand firm, the apostle says, stand firm, and be strong. So, you know, don't be a baby here. Cowboy up, man up, whatever we're supposed to say. Come on now. 1 Corinthians 9:25. Notice discipline comes up all the time. Jocko Willink says, emotions don't get a vote. You know, discipline. It's like, well, we want emotions to have a vote. But discipline is really important in the Christian faith. 1 Corinthians 9:25. Every man that strives for the competition is disciplined in all things. I therefore so run not as uncertainly. I know I'm racing and I look like I'm racing. So I fight not as one that beats the air. I'm not shadow boxing. But I keep under my body, like, get up, get going. I keep under my body and I bring it into subjection, lest by any means when I preach to others, I myself should not be approved. And notice this in the fruit of the Spirit. It's very, very discipline-oriented. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering. We can call it patience, but also means to suffer long. Say, oh, my belly hurts. Who cares? Suffer, you know? Do it anyway. Gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, discipline. Discipline. It's part of the Christian life. Titus 2:2. The older men must be sober, grave. You know, gravity. Life is important. Figure it out. The older men should be sober and grave and disciplined, solid in faith. And they should have patience. Like, oh, I hurt. So what? 2 Peter 1:5. And beside this, give all diligence. Add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge discipline. And discipline, patience. So you got to just be strong, you know, don't be a baby. Well, women are determined, they're persistent too. You know, it's not apples to oranges, it's apples to apples. Sure, all Christians are determined and persistent. But maybe the women, because of this whole biological thing that is hardwired into their spirits, maybe they're a little bit more persistent when it comes to the family circle. And the men a little more persistent with things outside the family circle. So Harvard University did this study. And their conclusion was, you know, surprise, surprise. You could have learned this from a kindergarten teacher, but Harvard teaches us. By school age, the average boy in the classroom is more active than the girls. Like, really? Scientific American article from a few years ago, The Truth About Boys and Girls. Boys are more active, girls more verbal. Well, yeah. And the problem is, we don't like that in boys most of the time. So an article called The New World Disorder is talking about ADHD. What if society were different? What if we're structured so that having ADHD was actually an advantage? And this isn't some futuristic thought experiment. A new study suggests that this ADHD-friendly world may actually be part of our past. Traits that are harmful in one setting can be helpful in another. So picture this. You want your little boy to sit in that classroom with his hands folded and be quiet for 8 hours. Well, what if little boys aren't really made to do that? How about a different scenario? How about if we go back 300 years, we're on the great American frontier, and there are those bighorn sheep up on the mountain. And we look around at our tribe, say, anybody around here want to climb up that mountain and shoot one of those bighorn sheep and bring us back some supper? And the ADHD boy says, I'll climb the mountain. Like, you will? Well, God bless you. Have at it. Go get that sheep. It's like, wow, anybody else want to do it? No, I want to sit here quietly with my hands folded. Okay, well, now the guy who chased the bighorn sheep up the mountain, he's going to become the chief of the tribe. He's the best guy we have. Say, uh-oh, bandits are coming. We should send somebody way out there and meet them and stir up trouble. Anybody want to do that? And all the little boys sit with their hands folded quietly and say, I don't want to do that. And the guy with ADHD says, I'll run 20 miles and go beat up the bad guy. Like, well, God bless you. Have at it. You can be our chief from now on. You're the best we have. And now we say, oh, that little boy, he's got a disability. That little guy, why, he's got a disorder. We have to fix him. I know. Let's give him more drugs. Kind of sad. And even if it's not that extreme, still kind of sad. My time is up, but I remember I was sitting taking a test one day, and when we were done with the test, this wasn't in college, when we were done with the test, we could go to recess. And I felt like I was going to jump out of my skin. I had a few more answers, and I stood up, and I walked next to my paper and finished them out, and I slammed it down when I was done and ran outside. Like, oh, life. When school was out, I was the happiest boy in the world. And every August, my birthday is in August, and every August, my birthday would come in early August, and then there would be this sense of dread, like, oh no, school's going to start. I didn't want to do that. I wasn't cut out for it, and that's the way it was. You know that little boy who wants to press the issue with his teacher? Say, yeah, you know, that little guy, his teacher doesn't like him. She doesn't know what to do with him. You know what's so great about that little boy? If he'll follow Jesus, you know what will happen? Someday he'll press the issue against peer pressure because he's determined and he's persistent. So you call it aggressive. You call it stubborn. You call it disrespectful. Yeah, well, maybe he's just pressing the issue. And maybe someday when people ask him to do something wrong, then he'll press the issue again. And maybe someday there will be a terror threat and he'll press the issue. Maybe someday someone will come along and say, I'm sorry to tell you, you have a disability, you're going to be crippled, you're going to be blind. And you'll say, it's okay, I'll press the issue, I'll do the best I can, I'll be the best at therapy, and I'll make up for it any way I can. Maybe someday someone will come along and say, we have this invention that refuses to be invented. We want to fly, and we just can't fly. He'll be persistent and say, yes, we will too fly, I'll make a way. He'll be persistent. And that's good. That's discipline. It's standing fast, and it's not safety first. And the most important, in large font, maybe someday, he's going to press the issue against sin. Everybody else will sit quietly with their hands folded and said, I will not. I will not. I won't cave in. I won't shut up. I'm not going to give in. I'm going to stand, and I'm going to do something right. And maybe even he came from a home that wasn't good, and he says, it all stops right here and right now. Beginning right here, right now, this family is something different. And I'm determined, and I'm persistent, and I'm going to stand strong, and I'm going to be like a man, and I'm going to make it happen. And that's how good things happen in the life of any Christian, maybe sometimes especially male. So we've presented two possibilities. You can either be a selfish smart aleck with a whatever attitude who thrashes through life with frequent hookups and inebriation. That's what they say a male should be, I guess. Or you can try something else, the New Testament way. You'll be a high producer with foresight. I'm alert. I know what's going on. A high producer with foresight, strong instincts to protect the weak, and willingness to risk personal pain in pursuit of a worthy goal. And on this Father's Day, if you're a male, I hope you'll embrace the second category. Even if you're a female, I hope you will. I'd like you to bow your heads and close your eyes. Before we go home today, if there's a person here who has never yet trusted Jesus as Savior, can I give you just a moment of silence to talk to the Lord however you want and give your heart to Him? Tell Him that you'll follow Him. You'll do it His way. You'll be that kind of a person. if you have never gone to him and told him that you believe in him, that he died for you, that he rose again, that he's offering you salvation, if you haven't told him that, tell him now. Because if you call on the Lord, you will be saved.